I want to welcome everyone here this afternoon to the Second Court of Appeals. We have one case that will be argued and another case that's under submission without oral argument this afternoon. I understand that the attorneys have checked in and they're ready. I would like to introduce our panel today. To my right is Justice Bill Meyer. To my left is Justice Lee Gabriel, and I'm Justice Bonnie Sutterth. Would the clerk please call the case?
Court will now call Amir Thug John Appletuni, a.k.a. Jonathan Appletuni, versus Enclave at Grapevine LP, a Texas Limited Partnership. May it please the court, Mr. Jeffrey Sandberg will argue for the appellant. Mr. Richard Salgado will argue for the appellate.
May begin.
May it please the court, counsel. I'd like to start by thanking the court for letting us have oral argument. This case was not originally set for oral argument, and we know that your time is very valuable, and there's limited resources here, so thank you very much. There's basically two issues here. I'm going to first address our motion for summary judgment on our cause of action on the vendor's lien, very briefly. Our motion for summary judgment has Mr. Affletuni's affidavit. We have the deed. We see that there's a reserved vendor's lien. There's no dispute that the debt is unpaid. There's no dispute that Mr. Affletuni demanded payment on the debt after the prior judgment. So res judicata does not apply. I think we're all in agreement on that. So Mr. Affletuni established as a matter of law in his motion for summary judgment that he's entitled to rescind his vendor's lien. Now, that leaves the one affirmative defense pleaded by the Enclave. Enclave is pleaded collateral estoppel. Initially, at first blush, my reaction was that there was a problem as it related to there being an affirmative defense based upon the first judgment. And then I realized that my thinking was not as clear and not as precise as it needed to be, because I was mentally substituting res judicata principles for collateral estoppel principles. Collateral estoppel is a much narrower affirmative defense. And what we look at, as this, I'm sure the court's well aware, we look for the identical facts or identical issues actually being resolved in the prior case. And the second prong, they have to be essential to the issue. Okay, now there's a third prong. I don't think there's a dispute, and that's that the parties are adversaries. I think the summary judgment record establishes how Enclave took title. So I'm going to focus my discussion on the first two elements. One of the things in my thinking, and frankly, when we filed our response to their motion for summary judgment, and a little bit in our motion for summary judgment, and very much in our reply brief, is that Enclave is relying on res judicata principles, even though they try to label them as collateral estoppel. Because of that, I'm going to walk through them.
So you're saying that they're relying on a cause of action rather than an issue?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Now, doesn't a cause of action have certain issues within it?
A cause of action has issues in it. However, when we look at collateral estoppel, and collateral estoppel being narrower than res judicata, whether or not a cause of action was previously decided is not the collateral estoppel standard.
Right. It's whether an issue was decided. And if an entire cause of action maybe wasn't decided, but that issue was decided, then collateral estoppel applies.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And don't you require, for us to agree with your position, aren't we required to embrace the notion that there was a void title based on the violation of the automatic bankruptcy stay?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And isn't that an issue as to whether or not something is a void title?
That is an issue, Your Honor.
And didn't the Dallas court squarely decide that?
It did not, Your Honor. Okay, the Dallas Court of Appeals, in its opinion, did not say whether the foreclosure sale was void. It didn't say whether it wasn't void. It didn't say whether it was valid. It didn't say whether it was invalid.
Well, it said that the bankruptcy stay wasn't violated because your client had no equity in the property, and therefore it could not have impacted his Chapter 13 bankruptcy stay.
And Your Honor, while they discussed the equity in the property, okay, that's where the decision point or the decision points here start to separate. And the reason is this. We list a series of Fifth Circuit cases. We list some other circuit cases that clearly hold second liens are property within the bankruptcy estate. And we discussed them in our brief. We discussed them in our motion in the trial court. We discussed them in our response in the trial court. When we look at the Three Strokes opinion, that opinion started and actually discusses two discrete issues. It discusses whether or not the second lien was property of the bankruptcy estate, and it decided it was, consistent with the other court opinions, and it discusses what it relies upon. The second issue before Judge Jernigan was whether or not the stay should be lifted. At that point, Judge Jernigan then considered whether or not there was equity in the property. And that was part of a motion to lift stay. And what Judge Jernigan decided was that needed to be further fleshed out. So as a result, when we look at what the Court of Appeals wrote, the Court of Appeals said what it said as to equity in the property. Now, whether or not Grapevine Diamond had equity in the property is not relevant to whether Mr. Affletooney had equity in the second lien. But the discussion of equity in the property is not an essential issue, because we look first at whether or not the second lien is property of the bankruptcy estate. And when we look at the Texas Supreme Court cases that hold clearly, a violation of the bankruptcy stay is void, period.
And aren't those cases where the property interest has a value?
Those are never discussed in the Texas cases that we discuss. Okay, they just look, and for example, we cite to the Continental case, and that's a Texas Supreme Court case. We also cite to this court in its INRI Sensitive Care at 28 Southwest 3rd, 35, okay, that a state court cannot validate a violation of the bankruptcy stay. So if the bankruptcy stay is in place, it's void, and that's what Texas jurisprudence tells us. And if someone wants to seek to correct that problem, if the lender or the creditor says, ugh, I shouldn't have foreclosed, they go then to the bankruptcy court to try to fix it. They don't go to state court. And that's clearly what this court held in Resensitive Care. A state court isn't going to validate the violation. So when we look at where the decision points are, for our purposes, the issue is, was this property of the bankruptcy estate? And the answer is yes. All of the case law tells us it is. The second issue discussed in Three Strokes doesn't really become a decision point for us, and it's not essential as a result. And as a result, collateral estoppel doesn't apply. Now, additionally, frankly, the Dallas Court of Appeals also held that there could not be damages for the wrongful foreclosure. We're not here seeking damages. So that's not the same issue. It fails the collateral estoppel test. Now, appellees make some arguments, as I mentioned before, and I want to discuss them in a little bit of detail, that are frankly not collateral estoppel arguments. Okay? They ask for this court to see an implicit ruling that there was the foreclosure sale was valid. From a collateral estoppel standpoint, the court should not imply. And we cite this court to the Van Dyke opinion out of the Texas Supreme Court, 697 Southwest 2nd, 381. That's in our reply brief. The pinpoint page is 384. That argument fails. That's more of a res judicata argument. Similarly, they also try to point, and they did this in the trial court as well, to what was previously argued. What was previously argued is not the collateral estoppel standard. But also, and they looked at, and we cited to the Tarter, T-A-R-T-E-R opinion out of the Texas Supreme Court, for the principle, okay, that a cause of action is not the collateral estoppel standard. Okay, it's not the ultimate issue. Now, they also point to the prior proceedings. They say, well, but there was a wrongful foreclosure cause of action previously. Okay, once again, not the collateral estoppel standard. Okay, the point is when I talk about the collateral estoppel standard, okay, we need the same facts to be fully litigated in the prior suit. And the way, and I appreciate that this has come here on a fairly, what at least appears to me to be a fairly unusual procedural position. Okay. The bottom line is the same facts were not previously litigated and decided as it relates to a discrete issue. So as a result, collateral estoppel fails. Now, finally, if we look at Appellee's brief, on page 21, they couch our argument as being that if something wasn't decided, if it wasn't specifically discussed, that then collateral estoppel doesn't apply. And yeah, frankly, that if it wasn't previously decided, if it wasn't the same issue, same facts, it wasn't previously decided, collateral estoppel does not apply. Citibank, and I want to try to give the court some time back here. I see I am green still. The bottom line here, Your Honors, is this. Jonathan Aflatooney has been damaged. He, as it stands right now, he's lost his property. He's lost his lien. Okay. Enclave took through Citibank, and we start going up the chain of title. Citibank caused this mess. Let it be Citibank's problem. Okay, Jonathan shouldn't have his property taken away. Okay. He should be allowed to rescind his lien. Okay. Enclave has recourse to Citibank, and so they can do that. This is Citibank's mess. The record shows that Citibank was informed Jonathan was in bankruptcy when it foreclosed. It just didn't care. So instead of, frankly, this being Mr. Aflatooney's mess, we ask the court to let it be Citibank's mess, reverse the judgment, and render in favor of Jonathan for the rescission of his lien.
Mr. Sandberg, can you take just a few questions, please? Us have a problem reading the language that's in the deed that's attached to your appendix at page 74, that's the last page of the deed itself. It's the page, I believe it's a part of the deed of trust. And it's talking about the vendor's lien. And it's there talking. The language is stating that it's agreed that the vendor's lien, as well as the superior title in and to the above described premises, is retained against the property. And then there's some reference in that language that the vendor's lien is retained in favor of the lender and the vendor.
But yes, Your Honor.
All right. What does the lender have, and what does the vendor have? Does the vendor have a first and superior lien according to your position that supports the $2,740,700.51 they're supposed to have gotten at the closing? Or might have gotten, had the option of drawing, apparently. But nonetheless, it was left out there as unpaid and was is what you're now asserting that your client is entitled to receive in terms of a application of the vendor's lien. Am I right about all that?
Well, Your Honor, the vendor's lien was made junior to the superior lien held by the lender. So it's subordinated. However, Mr. Affletooney still has rights in that lien. So
was his rights in that lien cut off when it was foreclosed by the Citibank on the deed of trust that was a part of that closing?
It was not, Your Honor, because the foreclosure was void.
The foreclosure was just void. The Dallas court appeared to address pleadings that were filed on behalf of your client to attempt to assert this vendor's lien. And I know you're out of time, but I need to ask you these questions if I might, Chief. The Dallas court made an oblique reference to the bankruptcy proceedings and talked about the proceedings that were filed to address the bankruptcy that was then pending. On behalf of the grantee at the deed on September the 10th of 2007. Have then transferred it. But the point I'm making is there was no language in the opinion in the Dallas court that I read that talked about how the procedure to request relief from the automatic stay that was filed on behalf of the grantee was also applied to your client, who was the person holding the vendor's lien.
Well, Your Honor, Grapevine, if I may continue, please. Grapevine Diamond had filed for bankruptcy. We see that in the record. And then the stay was lifted in the Grapevine Diamond bankruptcy.
Yeah, the Citibank filed an application to be relieved from the automatic stay in that bankruptcy.
There is nothing in the record that shows Citibank ever filing in Mr. Affletooney's bankruptcy, a motion to lift stay in Mr. Affletooney's bankruptcy. And so what occurred in the Grapevine Diamond bankruptcy may be essential, and it may certainly directly impact Grapevine Diamond's claims. But Grapevine Diamond isn't here. It does not directly impact, and it would not be res judicata, and it doesn't establish anything as it relates to Mr. Affletooney's claims.
Were those bankruptcies pending in the same bankruptcy court?
Your Honor, I don't remember anymore. I suspect they were both in the Northern District. I don't know if they were before the same judge anymore. I just don't remember, sir.
Wait a minute. The Dallas court says that they overrule Affletooney's issues, alleging that summary judgment was improper because the foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay in Affletooney's bankruptcy. Now, isn't that directly on point?
Well, the problem, Your Honor, is this, okay? If we look at why it overruled, which they don't say, okay, they talk about the second issue discussed in Three Strokes.
Wait a minute, though. With collateral estoppel, it's whether or not the issue is litigated, and whether it's litigated in front of a judge or in front of a jury or in front of an appellate court on review, it's whether it was litigated. And if you have a jury finding, the jury doesn't tell you why. They just tell you what the finding is. So why should the standard be higher for an appellate court to tell you why they're overruling the point that says that the sale allegedly violated the stay in Affletooney's bankruptcy?
Well, and Your Honor, it's because the Court of Appeals opinion discusses multiple issues. For example, the second issue that was discussed in Three Strokes, they don't say, here is our holding regarding the violation of the bankruptcy stay and whether or not the property was part of the bankruptcy estate.
They just simply overrule it.
They just overruled the issues, but they didn't reach...
But they didn't tell you why.
Well, they didn't reach the specific issue of whether or not the property was part of the bankruptcy stay. And there was multiple claims for relief, multiple causes of action, and they're also discussing, of course, in that same section, some of the Grapevine Diamond issues. And so, yeah, as a result, collateral estoppel is not present based solely upon the Dallas Court of Appeals opinion.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandberg, what was the balance due on the $6,375,000 loan that was dated September 10, 2007, on January the 4th, 2001? How much money was still owed the bank whenever they did the foreclosure and bid it in at $3 million?
I don't have that number off the top of my head, Your Honor.
Well, that what we've had is 3 years and 4 months whenever from the time that the bank felt that there was adequate value in this unimproved 8-and-some-odd acres of land in Grapevine to make a loan on it for $6,375,000, knowing that there was an additional lien for $2,740,000. So we're looking at property that's got debt on it at the date of closing of September the 10th, 2007 of nearly $9 million. But that property is depreciated in value where it's down to $3 million on January the 4th of 2011.
Well, it's a very surprising drop in value. And
well, I'm saying that's all those numbers were in the record through your summary judgment presentations to the Collin County Court and the Dallas Court of Appeals. Those numbers were in the record.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And in Collin County and in front of the Dallas Court of Appeals, Mr. Alfatouni was indisputably asking for damages. So
now, am I right that the status of the land was that it remained unimproved acreage?
Throughout the time it was held by Grapevine Diamond, yes, Your Honor.
And from the time of the closing on September the 10th, 2007, until the foreclosure on January the 4th, 2011, this land remained unimproved real property.
Yes, sir.
That declined in value from $9 million to $3 million.
Well, we took issue with the bank's numbers, Your Honor.
Thank you for answering my questions, Mr. Sandberg.
Okay.
Thank you. Would you add 5 minutes to their time, please?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I was asking the clerk
to add time.
I apologize. I couldn't hear you.
That's fine.
You went more than your time, and so there was more time added to the appellee's presentation.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Richard Salgado, here representing Enclave Grapevine. And Mr. Alfatouni is asking this court to do a lot of things. Not only is he asking the court to reverse Justice Birdwell's grant of summary judgment, but in doing so, as the court has recognized, he is asking this court to undo the 2012 sale of the property to my client, to undo the 2011 sale to an investment company that later sold it to my client, to undo the 2011 foreclosure sale by Citibank, to reinstate the secured lien that Citibank had on that property. And he is asking for the court to do all of this in order to restore to Mr. Alfatouni the vendor's lien that the bankruptcy court already decided has no equity left in it.
Where did that decide that, and where is that in the record?
Well, Your Honor, the bankruptcy court's decision held at that time, and I can answer for you one of your questions to opposing counsel, was how much was owed still. At the time of the foreclosure, the amount owed was $6,732,506.
Tell me again.
$6,732,506. And that is the amount owed to Citibank at the time of the foreclosure. So it actually increased from the original loan amount, which I would presume.
So there wasn't any pay down on the principal of the original loan at all. All that happened is had additional interest added onto it for the 3 years and 4 months that this note was possessed by Citibank.
That is correct, Your Honor. And so at that time, we had a situation there where that property was upside down. It was completely upside down, with interest accruing on top of it.
All right, I'll stop interrupting you, but let me ask you this question while it's on my mind. What was the sales price from Citibank on the first sales transaction after the foreclosure?
The Citibank to, I believe it was SPK Properties, or the next company, is what you're asking. I do not know that number offhand, but my colleague will probably look for it right now while I'm speaking, and we may provide it to you.
Okay, thank you.
But so, essentially, though, the whole end run of this is to restore that vendor's lien that really is not, there's nothing left in it. It was an unsecured lien after Citibank, which was already upside down there. And this is, again, why collateral estoppel exists here. And collateral estoppel does exist in this case. There is no res judicata concepts at all at play here. There never has been. Justice Whitehill in the Dallas Court of Appeals decided this issue squarely. I've got right here in front of me the relevant pages I'm holding of the Court of Appeals opinion on this. And as Your Honor quoted, directly said, we overruled the portions of Grapevine Diamond and Appletooney's second, fourth, fifth, and sixth issues. And then it goes on to say it was improper because the foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay in the bankruptcy. And the court didn't just say that. The court explained why. It went through and explained why the three strokes case was distinguishable. And it explained exactly why there's a property interest being protected in a bankruptcy stay, but here there was no property interest. There wasn't even in three strokes, for example, there might have been a property interest. Here, based on how upside down that property was and how much money was owed to Citibank and how little that property was worth, there was absolutely no property interest at that time left, and there was nothing to be implicated by that bankruptcy stay. And so, again, the standard for collateral estoppel is simple here. Was it the same issue? Was it essential to the judgment? And again, the judgment is directly on that issue. And was the same party adverse? And again, Mr. Affleck-Toomey does not contest that. I've read through this opinion several times now and struggled to find any way to reconcile this as being anything other than on all relative points, directly on point, directly controlling here, and collateral estoppel. At this point, 5 judges have adjudicated on this, all against Mr. Affleck-Toomey. Mr. Affleck-Toomey, after Justice Whitehill's opinion, appealed it to the Texas Supreme Court and sought review there. Was denied review, sought review in the U.S. Supreme Court, was denied review there. The issues that he presented to the U.S. Supreme Court for review are the same issues he now frames here. Was this a violation of the bankruptcy stay? And frankly, all roads in this case run directly and irrevocably through that one issue. There is no question. Mr. Affleck-Toomey's brief is replete with dozens of references on virtually every page to this void, invalid sale during the foreclosure. Without that sale being invalid or void, there is absolutely no argument to be had here. And that issue was decided without question. And again, there just simply is a matter of collateral estoppel. And there's really, I don't want to overly complicate this. I'm happy to answer further questions the court might have on this. But it's pretty cut and dry from our perspective, and so I'm happy to answer any of the questions, but if not, I have nothing else to add.
I have a question about the status of the vendor's land and its conflict with the deed of trust land of the bank. I know the paperwork reflects that. The language is referencing a superiority in the deed of trust lien for the bank.
Yes.
And then it says that the bank shares in the vendor's lien. What was the bank's share in the vendor's lien?
Candidly, Your Honor, not as a bankruptcy lawyer looking at that and understand, I am not totally sure of what the answer would be there, except to the extent that obviously the bank had a superior right there. The bank had the senior debt there. And so as far as how that goes, it would be subrogated to it. I don't, again, know where to say beyond that. But simply put, it has to yield. It necessarily does, because if it doesn't, we have absolutely no certainty. We have no finality. Otherwise, any unsecured lien like this could always pop up a decade later, even after 4, 5, 6 downstream sales, and wreak havoc on business expectations.
Well, how do you... I'm not talking bankruptcy law now. Sure. I'm talking just plain old Texas property law, setting it, looking at a deed and seeing what's in the deed and trying to figure out, okay, what are the interests that are... provided for in this deed. And the language on top of on the top of the page 74 in the appendix,
yes,
is talking about a vendor's lien that's superior. You see that?
I will certainly very soon here.
Find the page 74 again.
All right. I'm looking at it right now. And we're looking at the language at the very top of that, correct?
Yeah, where it says it's expressly agreed that the vendor's lien, as well as the superior title in and to the above-described premises, is retained against the property, premises, and improvements until the note and second lien and all interest thereon are fully paid. And then this deed shall become absolute. We're talking now here about the deed of trust. Or this is, let me look here. This is a part of the special warranty deed. But at the top of page 72, it's talking about the deed of trust, but it doesn't, I think we've got a page missing.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm trying to see if there's something missing in this appendix, because it would help explain this a little bit better.
Well, okay, let's just focus on the part of the language in the in this document that's recorded that I'm talking about, saying that the vendor's lien is, as well as the superior title in and to the above described premises, is retained against the property. I mean, isn't that inconsistent with other language saying that there is to be a superiority afforded to the deed of trust lien for the bank?
Well, I would think it would be retained, but it's retained to the extent that if anything is left, once the bank's interests are exhausted, at that point it would still exist. It would be retained. It's not going anywhere. But it still would only really matter if anything is left. It's, again, it's a guaranteed percentage of whatever that number is, but if the number is zero, it's a percentage of zero, would be how I would reconcile that. I see it as necessarily not inherently inconsistent so much as showing that the vendor would retain some right once the bank has been satisfied. It's not been extinguished because the bank is satisfied. It still exists, but there's nothing left in this instance. If, for example, the property maybe had increased, let's say the property had shot in value and it was worth $8 or $10 million at that time.
Well, it goes on to say, and I'm having trouble understanding this last phrase too, because it says that the vendor's lien is being retained in favor of lender and vendor as if the same had been retained by vendor and assigned by proper assignment to lender without recourse upon on vendor, lender being thus fully subrogated to the same. The lender's being subrogated. I'm just thinking this language in this document talking about the relationship between the vendor's lien and the deed of trust lien is not what I'd call real clear.
It is not, Your Honor. This currently could benefit from some Brian Garner rewriting of prose style here, but at the end of the day, though, Your Honor, ultimately, I believe in this case, it's water under the bridge, because at the end of the day, we're still dealing with a situation where the Court of Appeals, where Justice Whitehill already ruled on this, where that court's already ruled on this. And
well, you see, you keep going back to that Dallas court, and I want to remind you that we're in Tarrant County.
Of course, Your Honor. Of course.
And I appreciate the good, solid reasoning that's done by my colleagues on the Court of Appeals in Dallas. But it's not binding on us. And I'm having trouble with understanding the mixing of the title in terms of the language in these deeds that we're looking at and what the people intended when they sat down and did this closing on September the 10th of 2007. And if the intention was to, as provided by the documents now, to make this vendor's lien superior and have it held superior until the note's paid that's owed the bank, and the note never got paid that was on the bank, then why didn't the vendor's lien continue as superior, and isn't it superior today?
Well, Your Honor, simply put, again, what the situation is at that time, I don't know. I can't be there in that room. And again, well, Mr. Appletooney was party to this, and his counsel is not
all of us
able
have
to.
All of us are bound by what's on the documents in terms of trying to interpret the intention of what the parties agreed to in their contract.
Well, I'll also add, Your Honor, that this is an issue to the extent that this would be the issue that could enliven Mr. Appletooney's claim. It's something that he's had ample opportunity to brief and to argue before and has not. It's something that at this point we're now addressing this pretty far down the road on whether or not, if that, to the extent that even was something. And again, I without the benefit of looking at it deeper, it is something where very likely there are clear answers for that. But again, standing here looking at this language cold, I don't have the answer at my fingertips.
Well, the Dallas court looked at this, and as my Chief Justice opened with questions about, they certainly address specifically all of the claims that were before it by Mr. Appletooney at that point, and said they're overruled. And then as it's going through the logic of how it got to where it got to on in their opinion on page 231 on the appendix, and they're talking about how we get to this. They get to it by saying, well, the bankruptcy court in the matter of Grapevine Diamond has said there's no equity. And they did that because there was a direct matter before the bankruptcy court in the motion to lift the stay. They said in regards to that motion to lift the stay and the evidence presented, there's not any equity. But that wasn't addressing the question of the superiority of the vendor's lien. They just said there's not any equity here for the lien, and the lien on the vendor's lien was a $2,700,000 figure that was in there on top of our loan at the time of closing, and therefore we're superior and you're out, as far as the bank's concerned.
Well, Your Honor, I think there certainly is. I mean, if you turn the bankruptcy code on this, there's certainly various ways of looking at a lien of any type and whether or not there's value associated with it. And again, looking at that here, the bankruptcy code, again, is a complicated creature, which I don't want to pretend to wade into with, you know, any great level of detail here, but I think that there certainly is a set established priority to any kind of lien. And in this situation, the bankruptcy court did determine at the time, looking at what was before it, and it was both bankruptcies were indeed reconfirmed in the Northern District of Texas.
Wait a minute. The bankruptcy court didn't have before it Mr. Appletooney's bankruptcy. when it ruled on the question of the equities that were there on behalf of Grapevine Diamond.
That is correct. But Mr. Aflatooni filed his bankruptcy approximately 2 weeks after that ruling, and then after the sale, proceeded to stop filing papers, and that subsequently went away. But
I'm not talking about bankruptcy law. I'm talking about Texas property law, real estate.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's where I'm having the issue about whether or not this Bendars Lynn had a shared ownership interest between Mr. Aflatooni and the bank, or a independent, surviving, superior ownership interest on behalf of Mr. Aflatooni, because that's what comes down to in looking at the real estate law and just the law of properties in Texas, not regarding to what the bankruptcy court didn't do. And it didn't appear to me that issue was soundly and roundly discussed in the Dallas Court opinion, the Dallas Court of Appeals opinion.
Well, I would probably, Your Honor, take it to a slightly higher level, which I recognize where you're going with that, and I appreciate that. I would take it to the larger perspective, however, of Mr. Aflatooni's big picture claim, of course, which is the bankruptcy sale was invalid. The bankruptcy sale was void. And he argued that to the Court of Appeals, and the Court of Appeals came back and said, bankruptcy sale was not void. It was not invalid.
I didn't see that they said that. Where did they say that?
Well, I would again go to the language there where they say they overruled the exceptions, and they say that they overruled the second, fourth, fifth, and sixth issues, alleging it was improper because the foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay.
Yeah, they say, accordingly, based on the specific facts before us, we overrule the portions of Grapevine Diamond and Aflatooni's second, fourth, fifth, and sixth issues, alleging for summary judgment for Citibank was improper because the foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay in Aflatooni's bankruptcy. Pretty direct.
I think the claim Mr. Aflatooni has made here is that it's because it violated the stay. I mean, that's the bankruptcy stay, and that this sale is in violation of it is the essence of his argument. And that is the issue he has made. And again, every argument he's made builds upon that, whether it's a violation of the bankruptcy stay. And that really is the premise on this. Again, in some of the panel's counsel, of the panel's questions to Mr. Aflatooni's counsel, the response to that was, well, it was because it was invalid. It was a void sale. Well, the question whether it was a void sale, as I read it, has been answered. So.
Thank you for answering my question, sir.
No problem. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And if there's no further questions then from the panel, I will sit back down. Thank you.
May it please the court, just real briefly, we left off on the issue of damages in the Collin County Court. The problem there was that while the appraiser expert was timely designated, he was late with his actual appraisal report, and so that was struck. And it was really unfortunate that he couldn't get that done on time. I think if he had, we probably wouldn't be here now. Having said that, in our appellant brief on the subject of the vendor's lien, the vendor's lien is legal title and superior title, and we cite the court to the Flag Redfern Oil Company case at 744 Southwest 2nd 6, and we think Texas law is very clear on that issue. And so as a result, yeah.
But didn't you have an opportunity to argue that in the Dallas court? And you got an adverse ruling, and then you had the opportunity to take it up to the Supreme Court. You did, and they didn't look at it, and the U.S. Supreme Court didn't look at it either. And what do you say to someone who might say, this is just an attempt to do an end run around a matter that's already been adjudicated, and you get a second bite at the apple?
Well, the cause of action has been adjudicated, and yes.
The voidness of the sale has been adjudicated.
Well, the Dallas Court of Appeals opinion says what it says, Your Honor. The problem is collateral estoppel is a much narrower affirmative defense than res judicata.
And when we look at collateral estoppel and we look at whether or not a specific fact or an ultimate issue was decided and whether it was essential to what was before the court.
Are you thinking that some of this is dicta, that what the Dallas Court of Appeals wrote was not essential to their judgment?
Well, Your Honor, the problem is parts of it clearly relate to Grapevine Diamond versus Jonathan F. Latoon. So it would be
but as to those issues, those four issues, second, fourth, fifth, and sixth issues, as to whether or not it violated the stay in F. Latoon's bankruptcy, this is Mr. F. Latoon and his rights in his Chapter 13 bankruptcy.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. It's the problem is when we look at what the Court of Appeals said, and it was discussing largely the Three Stokes opinion, and discussing the second prong of the second portion of that opinion that discussed whether or not the motion to lift stay that was before Judge Jernigan should be granted or not.
Well, whether Dallas got it right or wrong, they got it. They decided it. And isn't that the essence of collateral estoppel? It's whether it's right or wrong, that's for you to take it up to the Supreme Court and get relief there. But it's been decided.
Well, the Court of Appeals opinion, Your Honor, says what it says, and it says, foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay. The problem is, okay, how much of that is Grapevine Diamond? How much of it is F. Latoon? When we look at underlying that conclusion of whether there was a wrongful foreclosure violation of the stay, when we look at the language up above, the Court of Appeals never makes holdings regarding its discussion up above, other than its discussion as it relates to Grapevine Diamond.
But you argued that same issue there. And they found against you on that same issue there. Correct?
The problem, Your Honor,
not is the problem, correct or not correct?
Not correct, Your Honor.
It's not correct. They didn't find against you on that issue.
The Court of Appeals wrote, and it said, because the foreclosure sale allegedly violated the stay in F. Latoon's bankruptcy. The problem is you've got multiple parties that's discussing, and you've got once you read out the Grapevine Diamond discussion, it doesn't make any specific holdings as to F. Latoon. And so as a result, collateral estoppel didn't apply. Okay, and I would also just say, while I'm still yellow, if we look at how the Court of Appeals framed the issue, they put it in terms of, does this require a different result? They never come out and say, is it void? Is it not void? Is it valid? Is it not valid? So, thank you again. Thank you very much for letting us have oral argument.
Thank you. Gentlemen, your case has been submitted. We thank you for your argument. It's been helpful. We have concluded our arguments for the day, so you're free to go about your business. Thank you.